The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thank you for connecting with the Radio Today programme. All the usual ingredients to come, but we'll kick off with the big story of the week, DAB. As they say in that TV betting commercial, will you? Won't you? Well, in a document published this week, a group representing 80 stations argues that what they call government-enforced switchover is not the way to go. Predictably, the BBC and the big commercial groups continue to argue that it is. So, in a minute, Ford Ennals from Digital Radio UK, but first, live from Belfast, here's UTV's Director of Strategy, Jimmy Buckland.
The Radio Today programme.
So, Jimmy, who is this document for? Are you trying to influence the government, or are you trying to influence the other commercial radio groups?
I think the important thing to perhaps say to contextualise that question is that over the last few months, there have been a lot of discussions taking place behind closed doors about the future of radio. They're very significant questions about how stations will be transmitted in the future, about which areas those stations will be able to cover and how listeners will access radio. And I think the first thing to say is that we feel maybe it's time for some of that debate to move out from behind closed doors so that listeners can participate more fully in the debate, so that policymakers in Parliament and elsewhere are aware of what's coming with potential government announcements on digital radio. And so that some of the stations who actually perhaps aren't necessarily represented at the top tables in the policy discussions can also have their say. So what we have done, together with 13 local radio operators and commercial operators, is to really try and set out a common position which seems to have emerged amongst a large proportion of the commercial stations in this country, outside really of those operated perhaps by groups such as Global and Bauer, which is really just to say that there are risks for a government-enforced switchover, both for UK radio listeners and also for local stations. And what we've done is we've produced a document which we will be sharing with local MPs in particular, really just to try and draw to their attention the implications for their constituents, for radio listeners in their local areas and for their local radio stations.
Your boss, Scott Taunton, has said in the press release that turning off FM would be the equivalent of turning off landlines just because everybody's now got a mobile. That's quite a persuasive argument.
Look, you can come up with various analogies. I think the principle is this. It's that everyone in the radio industry sees the benefits of digital technologies. We're all huge investors in digital technologies, and I was thrilled to see UKRD announcing a new digital station today. But actually, that support for digital does not have to come at the expense of platforms which deliver significant benefits to listeners. If I take a station, perhaps a station not within our fold, but one of the stations which is part of the coalition, the Touch FM network in the West Midlands, which is operated by the Quid M Group, that they have real benefits on FM at the moment because they can target differentiated programming, different local news bulletins to different parts of their coverage areas, and they can also bolster their local advertising revenues by attracting smaller scale advertising from small advertisers that perhaps want to reach Coventry or Stratford-upon-Avon. And actually, although DAB is a digital technology and offers huge benefits in terms of additional choice and in terms of improved sound quality for medium wave services, the local DAB network as currently structured does have a number of weaknesses, and one of those weaknesses is the inability of the network to support that same kind of localization which has been the hallmark of local commercial radio for many years.
Jimmy, you will be characterized as flat earthers. You will be seen as the little guys who don't get the big picture. Have you any realistic chance of success, or is the DAB juggernaut just too big?
Well, let's really address a dangerous assumption that does sometimes arise, which is that in order to be supportive of digital radio, you have to support government enforcing a switchover of particular services. In fact, I think there is every chance that government is already beginning to wake up to and realise the significant risks that the value that's been created and built up by the commercial radio sector over many years is going to be put at risk by an enforced move to a DAB platform that currently isn't structured to deliver what government actually wants commercial radio to deliver. We're at the vanguard in supporting digital radio, and just to take our company, you know, UTV in TalkSport operates a station which has one of the biggest, if not the biggest, website in commercial radio. We have local stations such as Juice FM, which we put onto DAB for the first time this year, and Juice FM has one of the sort of top 10 followings of any commercial stations in the country on social media. The way it engages in with its audience is really market leading. So we have no fears really of being characterised as flat earthers, because anyone who would assume that would just not understand our business, and probably just doesn't understand the issues.
You mentioned the word business, Jimmy. Final question: is this about business and profit and shareholder value, or is it actually about listener choice?
They're instinctively connected, Trevor. Our business is all about generating growth in local radio advertising revenues and national radio advertising revenues. And actually, for us, the surest way in which we do that is to ensure that we're meeting the needs of our listeners. And at the minute, government proposals for digital radio switchover simply aren't consistent with that desire to continue meeting the needs of our listeners.
Jimmy Buckland, Head of Strategy for UTV Media, thanks very much for joining us on the Radio Today programme.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
Only one place to come after that, and that's to the headquarters of Digital Radio UK. Ford Ennals, how are you?
Good afternoon, Trevor. It's great to see you again. Thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you. That's not very helpful, though, is it, really, what Jimmy had to say in their document?
Look, you know, I mean, I think we absolutely respect the views of everyone in the radio industry about the future of radio. This is a debate that's been going on for over 5 years. I think it goes back to 2008. We had a great debate around 2010. When the Digital Economy Act was passed, you may recall that. For the last 3 years, DCMS and the industry have been working on the Digital Radio Action Plan, which is just completed. So, you know, we've had 5 years of debating this. Meanwhile, the world moves on. And I think what we think, and I think, frankly, what I think the broadcasters representing 95% of listeners think, is that what we want now is some certainty. We've had the debate. What we want is some certainty. We want to know what is the future for radio in the UK. We want government to make a clear decision. That will allow us to invest in the future. That will allow us to innovate. And that will allow us to plan. And I think actually what I'm hearing is a different debate to one we had 3 years ago. I think we're not talking about the technology anymore. I think, you know, frankly, our friends at UTV, UKRD, they all have a great stake in DAB, and I think they're big supporters of DAB. I think they're just a little anxious about, are we moving too quickly?
Well, I think they're also saying, to pick up your word certainty, why should certainty mean that you have to be all digital and completely non-analogue? Why can't you be a little bit FM? Why can't you have that two-track approach?
Well, you know, I think one of the things the government has done, and this is different to what we did on TV switchover, is that they've said that they're going to sustain FM, and they're going to sustain FM as the home of ultra-local commercial radio stations and community stations. And I know the people who represent the 228 community stations think this is a great opportunity to actually enrich the diversity of local radio. So I think there is going to be a two-track approach, but part of that two-track approach is that national and major local stations, you know, will move onto DAB, obviously, as well as online and all IP platforms. And I think that's the shift. And I think government, and frankly 95% of the industry, think that that's the right thing to do because it's the more efficient thing to do. It means that we won't have dual transmission. It means we'll invest in a digital platform, which we think is the future, while maintaining FM for local stations. I think that's a great way to go.
Where does this put Radio Centre and Digital Radio UK, which I know is partly funded by the BBC as well, where does it put you in terms of speaking for the whole industry or for the whole of even commercial radio? This is a pretty important split, isn't it?
Well, you know, as I said, I think everyone's views have to be heard and have to be understood. And I think that's part of the process we've been through the last 5 years. Through this Digital Radio Action Plan, you know, all stakeholders, including our friends at UKRD and UTV, had the opportunity to be part of the debate, to be in the room, and they were represented. So I think we've had the debate. And I think, you know, it's really interesting to see the views of this small station lobby group. And we absolutely don't dismiss them. We want to understand what they're saying. And we recognise that they do represent 1.5% of listening, and if you exclude TalkSport. So while it's small, you know, it's important. And I think their views have to be heard.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Phil, but when you say they represent 1.5% of listening, you say it in a slightly dismissive way, I must...
Sorry, not at all. I think the point I made was, I think one of the great things about radio in the UK, and I think we all share a passion for radio in the UK, is the diversity of local stations. And what government and what DRUK want to see is a future policy and transition that actually supports local radio. So I'm not dismissive at all. And quite the contrary, and we're taking their views very seriously, and we're listening, and I know government are listening as well. We do think the debate has been had, and what we need, as I said, is to plan.
So you don't want them to have you don't want this debate to carry on, do you? They're saying, well, we think the debate has been had, but behind closed doors, and we want to spread it out and have more people involved in it. And you're saying, actually, it's time to move on.
I think, you know, after 5 years, it probably is time to move on. But what I think I would say, and, you know, maybe provide some reassurance, is that I think there are different views about pace. And I think this transition to digital, the digital switchover that people talk about, is going to take a lot longer than people think. I think it's many years away. And many years means that, you know, people will have time to prepare and plan the future at a station level, but also at a listener level. If you're buying equipment, you'll be able to buy a digital radio. So
we're not talking about 2014, 2015. It's going to be longer than that.
It's some years in advance of that.
Which must be a little bit of a disappointment to you, because when you took this job, those were the kind of dates you were talking about.
What happened was the previous government, you know, had set an aspirational date of 2015. And I think what I expect the minister to say at the end of this year is, you know what, guys, we're just not ready. The consumer's not ready. The industry's not ready. It's the right strategy, the right policy. We need more time. We need to wait until the majority of listening is to digital. And even then, we need to review thoroughly before we actually set a final date. So I think, you know, I think we are some years away from this. It will certainly happen after 2015. We'll hear some clarity from the minister on that later this year. But he will make sure, and I think government will make sure, that the industry has the time it needs to make this transition effectively.
And you want Ed Vasey to say, whatever this date is, there will finally be one where all of FM will be switched off, apart from for some smaller local stations.
What I want him to say is that, with certainty, is that there will be, the future of radio is digital, and there will be a future switchover. It's what Tessa Jowell said in 2003 around TV. She didn't set a date. In fact, interestingly, we were at about the same place in terms of household penetration and actually viewing and digitally as we are on radio. So I think we're about the same place. So if Ed Vasey stands up and says, we're definitely going to have a future switchover, it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years, we'll make sure we don't do it until we're ready, and then we'll make sure it's consumer-led. That will allow everyone to plan for the future, not just small stations, but the big stations, but also car manufacturers and retailers and radio manufacturers. That's the certainty we need.
But surely, if these 80 stations, these albeit smaller groups, are saying, no, we don't want that, we want you to push back from that, then actually you're not going to get the certainty that you want.
Well, once again, I think that what DCMS have in mind in setting the policy is to support these local stations, these small stations. And I think ultimately, I think they would prefer them to have the option to either stay on FM or to go to digital.
So twin track is okay?
I think for these small stations below the threshold, which has been set of 40% of TSA, and that was announced in the summer of this year, I think what DCMS are minded to do is to provide them an option to go to digital. And that's a piece of work that Ofcom have been leading, a so-called small-scale DAB solution. It looks really interesting, and I think it's something that DCMS and Ofcom will take to the next level. And I think it's something they're going to communicate to small stations at an upcoming Radio Centre meeting on the 21st. So I think this is a live and real project.
I'm really interested to hear you use the word option. Jimmy Buckland and... in that paper, they use the word government enforced. There's a change in emphasis there.
Well, once again, I don't set policy. DCMS sets policy with the help of the industry and Ofcom. What is clear is that stations who are above that threshold of 40%, under a switchover policy, ultimately would move wholly to DAB and online and TV. Transmission and would stop being on FM. And I think that is clear, and I think everyone needs to leap together, really, for it to be fair. I think below the 40%, these small stations, I think there is some discretionary ability, and that's for DCMS and Ofcom to determine the licensing requirements around it. But I know that a number of them, including some of the UTV stations, have said they'd like a path to digital. That's exactly for small stations where there's comparable costs and comparable audiences, and that's exactly what Ofcom are developing. I think, to be fair, you know, it's fairly early on, and they haven't had the chance to formally communicate it, and I think that's what's missing. And I think I absolutely call on government and Ofcom to communicate effectively to these 80 stations, to let them know and to be clear about what their future is and what their future options are. I don't think that's happened, and it needs to.
One final question, Ford. On behalf of anybody who lives near the A57 in Sheffield, anybody who lives in Rutland, anyone who lives in the middle of Stevenage, and the list goes on, when are we going to get a robust DAB signal in our cars?
Well, we all understand that there aren't enough DAB transmitters in the ground or on TV masts today to give us the robust signal that we need. I mean, that's what the work has been going on. BBC, as you know, have moved up to 94% of national coverage. They now have a plan to go above 97%, and they've already started building transmitters to do that. A lot of debate going on at the moment about local DAB coverage. We've seen it grow from 66% to 72%. We've seen 8 million more people brought into coverage in the last year, and with all those local DAB launches you've been hearing about. And the next phase is to build that to beyond 90%. So I know Ofcom and I think the industry are very confident. They know how to give not just extended coverage, but robust coverage, increased signal strength in those areas where it isn't strong, and are very confident they'll get the job done. That's what the next 3 years is about.
Ford Ennals from Digital Radio UK, thank you very much
thank
for having
Trevor.
Us.
No, great to see you.
We've got some radio news coming up from Stuart Clarkson this week.
Thank you, Trevor. Here are this week's top radio industry stories. As we've been hearing, there's a ding-dong over DAB. 13 commercial radio owners that represent 80 stations across the UK calling for the government not to announce a timetable for government-led digital switchover next month. The group's saying that an enforced switchover will be bad news for local radio. That row's led to one group pulling out of the commercial radio body Radio Centre, Anglian Radio, which owns Radio Norwich, North Norfolk Radio, The Beach, Town 102 and Dream 100, has given notice to resign. CEO David Lovell has told me he doesn't feel Radio Centre is representative of the smaller stations. Their paymaster is global in the main, he told me. He says, we don't feel they represent the smaller stations quite as well as they used to. Radio Centre says it's disappointing to lose a member. You can see more on that story on the Radio Today website. Meanwhile, it was all about Nottingham at the Student Radio Awards this year. The city's two student stations, URN and Fly FM, took home 6 awards each across gold, silver and bronze. URN named Station of the Year. 5 golds, though, for Fly FM, including Best Female and Best Newcomer. Hosted by Radio 1's Greg James and Capital's Dave Berry was the do. Well done to all the winners. You can see a photo special from the SRAs in this week's eRadio newsletter. Gone are the voiceovers from BBC WM, as the station this week introduced new imaging featuring local people.
The voice of Birmingham and the Black Country.
BBC WM 95.6.
Good morning, Pete Morgan at breakfast.
Well, that new production's been made by Fresh Air. There's also a kind of station song, the BBC WM anthem. Have a listen on the Radio Today website. Christmas is coming and the lineup's getting fat. with a PH. Capitals announced details of its Jingle Bell Ball arena gig. Katy Perry, Lady Gaga, the headliners. Robbie Williams, meanwhile, tops the bill for Bower Station Key103's Jingle Ball Live in Manchester. And good luck to everyone across the BBC taking part in fundraising efforts this week for children in need. Friday, of course, the focus of much of the activity. Wogan, Cotton, Ball and Grimshaw all flying the flag for radio as they host Friday night's telethon on BBC One. In case you hadn't noticed, our editor Roy Martin is away. He says he's sunning himself somewhere warm. We know he's probably in a dark room listening to jingles and looking at the push alerts on his iPhone. That's the latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Stuart Clarkson. And now it's time for David Lloyd's Radio Moments.
We start this week with controversy. November the 12th, 1976, and Radio 4's Any Questions comes from Basingstoke. Enoch Powell's on the panel, and David Jacobs tries to keep order.
There's a lot of noise going on outside. There's a lot of noise going on inside. What I would like to just say is this. I may have said it before on this programme, but you'll know this programme is listened to a lot more by a lot more people than are in this hall. But that doesn't mean to say that the people in this hall aren't a very good representative of the listeners.
Robin!
Now, that may be so. That may well be so, sir. But, no, just hold on. Now, hold on. Hold on. Could I just say this? All I say now, before we move on, is please do not try to enhance that which you wish to diminish by making a fool of yourself. And let's get on with the programme. Lord Regis.
One of the greatest...
Any questions this week, 37 years ago, and a reminder again of the skill of David Jacobs. It was the BBC's birthday this week. The fine old lady is now 91. Her launch MD was John Reith, and he said the BBC would aim to deliver the best broadcasting to the widest possible number of homes. Little did John know that it was almost to be the BBC itself which would be the catalyst for the downfall of its leader, exactly 90 years later.
But you must have known what happened, because a tweet was put out 24 hours beforehand, telling the world, 12 hours beforehand, telling the world that something was going to happen on Newsnight that night that would reveal extraordinary things about child abuse and that would involve a senior Tory figure from the Thatcher years. You didn't see that tweet?
I didn't see that tweet, John. I now understand.
Why not?
I check Twitter sometimes at the end of
you
the day, or
staff.
I don't check
you have
Twitter
an
at
enormous
all.
Staff of people who are reporting into you on all sorts of things. They didn't see this.
10th of November 2012, and George Entwistle meets John Humphreys on the Today programme. George resigned just hours later. The start of the BBC back in 1922 meant the first news bulletin, and that was presented this week by Arthur Burrows on 2LO. He read it twice, once more slowly, and he asked listeners which they preferred.
2LO, Marconi House, London, calling.
BBC local radio began in the provinces this week in 1922. In Manchester, 2ZY began. Hugh Bell was a research engineer at the time.
You see, we had equipment there. Nobody knew an awful lot about it. We'd been trying experiment broadcasts for some days before, and we had fairly good reports, some from local people, some from quite a distance. If we got something good, then everybody said, "Ooh, hold it, don't alter anything." Anyway, that night, it had worked the day before. We had our fingers crossed, and when the deadline came, we breathed a prayer, I think, and put the switch in, and it worked. Everybody thought we were wizards. I think we thought we were wizards too.
That same day in 1922, 5IT opened in Birmingham with the words "Witten calling." Also in Birmingham this week in 1960, MNA, the Midland News Association, registered a company to pursue a commercial radio licence for Birmingham. The company was to be the seed for BRMB. It took quite a long time for local radio of any kind to arrive in Lincolnshire, but it eventually debuted this week, 33 years ago.
7:10 on Tuesday, the 11th of November, 1980. And for the first time, there's a warm welcome to the programmes of BBC Radio Lincolnshire.
Those first few days were, well, they were scary, because half the team had done no live broadcasting before at all. So when we all got together, it buzzed. It really felt exciting, but we were always flying by the seat of our pants.
The opening of BBC Radio Lincolnshire this week in 1980. And it's now 2 years since John Myers started to compile his blunt but fond review of BBC local radio. Birthdays, and this week we say happy 48th birthday to this chap.
Well, there you are. What are we going to do now? We're going to try and get back in touch with Nigel? Okay, we're going to try and get that brolly to work and see if it'll do the trick with our satellite. I do have some more. Can you hear Paddy O'Connell coming into the studio? We do have some more emails I wanted to bring you.
Eddie Mair, born this week in 1965 from BBC Radio Scotland, 5 Live, and now really at home on Radio 4's PM. In chart news, it's 61 years this week since the first UK chart was published by NME magazine. It was a top 12. And it's 45 years since the Radio 1 chart stretched to a top 40 with Simon Bates.
Radio 1. COJ's and Brandy at number 21. 5 o'clock till 7 o'clock from now on Radio 1. And also in stereo VHF, it's the full British top 40. Radio 1. The bottom 20 between...
Simon Bates. Jocelyn Hay was a name often heard in broadcasting circles, a firm voice on standards. And it was this week, 32 years ago, that she founded the Voice of the Listener, and that was in response to the first threat to turn BBC Radio 4 into an all-news and current affairs network.
I know there's always been tension between particularly the BBC and the government, right the way back to the 20s, because of the power of the medium to influence public opinion. And that is why it is so important that we believe that it should be regulated in the public interest. And it should be able, on occasion, to stand up to government.
Jocelyn Hay. Changes in Devon this week. 21 years ago, Devonair relaunched as the new Devonair FM, Devon's better music station.
The new Devonair.
Devonair. The station was to last just 2 years longer. So with Capital going into the food business this week 17 years ago, Kelvin McKenzie's Talkco Holdings buying Talk Radio 15 years ago, Planet Rock launching 14 years ago, and Anita Morgan launching BBC Wales 35 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments.
Thank you as always, David Lloyd, and thank you to all our contributors this week. It's been a TDC production. Next week we'll be celebrating LBC's 40th birthday. Please join us for that.
The Radio Today programme.